Welcome to Beer, Beats, and Business, the business podcast for smart people who appreciate the insights found in a good conversation. That guy sitting at the end of the proverbial bar is your host, David J.P. Fisher, but everyone around here just calls him D. Fish. He's an author, speaker, and business coach. Basically, he's a professional talker. So grab a glass of your favorite beverage, grab a seat, and join us for today's episode. Let's see where the conversation takes us.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another interesting conversation with an interesting person. Today, the part of my interesting conversational partner is being played by my good friend, Brian Hall. Brian is the president of Carema Consulting, which helps early and growth stage recurring revenue companies to generate more revenue from their existing customer bases. Brian, how are you today?
Great, David. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
Likewise, my friend, especially when I get to imbibe a wonderful beverage while we're doing it. And I think you'll appreciate this. Our sponsor today is Sketchbook Brewing right here in Evanston, Illinois. You and I have had some conversations there before.
And
I am drinking one of their Amistosa Mexican lagers again today. I think I've had these before a while on the show. Big fan of this one. For those of you who don't know, Sketchbook, right in Evanston, Illinois, you can find them throughout the Chicagoland, and I'm sure they are close to beginning their journey into world domination. Fantastic beers, fantastic people, so definitely check them out. But anyways, Brian, here's my question to you. Why has customer success become such a hot topic right now when... In theory, customer success should have always been an important thing companies were concerned with.
Yeah, great question. And I think a lot of it, David, has to do with the explosion of software as a service, SaaS companies.
Okay.
Anytime that you are foregoing that big chunk of revenue at the front end that perpetually licensed software really helped you enjoy, and instead are doing it on a subscription basis where the cost of entry for a customer is relatively modest, it's really incumbent upon the software company, the SaaS software company, to make sure that those customers' desired business outcomes are understood, are being met. And because of that, you build that trust so that that customer is willing to tell you about more problems that they have or more opportunities that they see that you can help them solve. So I think the fact that the SaaS world has really blossomed has led to the similar growth of customer success, even though it's been something, you're right, that should have been a focus all along.
Okay, so that actually makes a lot of sense. So it sounds like previously when a customer had to invest a lot more, whether it was for a software platform or really for anything, the fact that they were investing a good chunk up front kind of made the bond a little tighter, but also it was a little harder to sell people, right? So you were going to work a little harder. You had to make sure you had a really good track record that you could point to people who were already happy with you. Now, because it's kind of easier to get started, the strength of the relationship doesn't have to be there right away. Is that right? Am I kind of summing that up?
Yeah, and I think the other thing to keep in mind, and again, depends that there's a variety of different in the software world, a variety of different licensing models, subscription licensing models. The ones that I'm typically seeing on more of the enterprise SaaS software world are 1 year or 3 year, sometimes even 5 year licenses. So there can be some time built in there to really make that customer successful, make them sticky. There are others where it's maybe monthly, month to month. So
right.
Imperative to get the customer, once you understand really what it is they're trying to achieve, to get them up and running and really seeing the value as quickly as possible. Because again, they might be making the decision on whether or not to stay with you on an annual basis, on a monthly basis. So you're really having to prove yourself over and over again. And to me, I love that world. I love the fact that you're always having to think about how can I drive more value for my customers. I think that makes for a great culture, and it makes for an exciting role, which I think this customer success role in the software world and in other what I'll call repeating revenue businesses is really, really interesting right now.
Right. Well, in some ways, I guess most businesses are repeating revenue, but to your point, it's kind of what is the time horizon that it repeats on?
Yeah, and is there some sort of contractual end date at which point in time, theoretically, a decision has to be made about whether or not your customer is going to continue licensing that software? You know, keeps everybody honest, customers too, keeps them honest too. You know, they need to be active, willing partners with you for this sort of more subscription world to be successful. And again, that's what I sort of call in the three different areas where customer success drives value. This is what I call sort of the entrench area. This is where you really, again, are driving value, helping that customer achieve his desired business outcome, and building that trust that can lead to the two other areas of where customer success drives value, which is expansion, mm-hmm. and then also land, because you can certainly take happy customers and they will willingly help you find new prospective customers that can feed the top of the sales
right.
funnel.
Well, and so it's interesting you're talking about that. The kind of metaphor that popped to my mind was the difference between dating and marriage, right? And mm-hmm. if you're dating, you're kind of always working to make sure you continue to date, right? There's no promises. If you want to talk about a contractual agreement, a marriage license, definitely, yes, there's a way out of it. It's just really, really hard. And I think looking at sometimes what happens with marriages, some of the challenges is you stop putting in that effort over, you know, on a consistent basis that you did when you were dating, because, hey, where can the other person go? It's a lot harder, right? So what you're saying is there's more focus on really staying up to the moment in terms of giving into this relationship with a customer that kind of keeps you on your toes.
Absolutely. And then you layer in all of that, as you mentioned before in your very kind introduction. I work a lot with early and growth stage recurring revenue or repeating revenue companies, including a lot of software companies. When you've got a company that's maybe starting to grow, starting to get some traction in the market, the product market fit is really good, all of a sudden, everything that maybe you did for the last 6 months or 9 months from a workflow perspective, from roles and responsibilities perspective, may not be as applicable anymore. Right. So you also have to think about how am I sort of continuing, and I did this a lot in the customer success world, how am I continuing to rev customer success as a important function within these companies in order to make sure that we're supporting the growth of the company, scaling with the business, but also making sure that you're keeping an eye on the customer and constantly delivering against their what can often be evolving desired business outcomes. Again, that's what makes this world of customer success with early and growth stage companies really, really fun to be part of.
And as you said, it's changing too, I imagine. It's got to be a lot different to talk customer success with an early startup where their account executives or their account management is probably a person, right? It's Liz, and mm-hmm. Liz knows every customer by name, even, you know, the big or small, because the company itself is not that big. But then all of a sudden, when you start to scale that, Liz can't talk to everybody all of a sudden. So now you have two, three, and hopefully on and on. I can imagine that's where you get some hiccups, right, as far as the customer success system or process.
For sure. And the other thing too is the primary roles and responsibilities for customer success changes as the company scales. So one of the things that I've experienced in my career in the software world is that when you're really early stage, and I kind of arbitrarily pick less than $5 million in annual recurring revenue. So these can be seed stage, Series A kinds of companies. Sure. From an investment point. The role that customer success plays, again, due to the proximity that they have to the customer base, is really to help sharpen sharpen that positioning and really sort of keep a keen eye on the product market fit. And if it's not there, bringing forward the data that really helps you understand how our customers responding. They clearly respond with their feet. If things aren't working well, they will churn, which is the worst thing that can happen in the customer success world. But when you're early stage, that churn can also be representative of, okay, maybe this isn't quite the right product market fit for us. Maybe we have to pivot somewhat, go after either a different market or try to solve a different problem in order to get better traction and then hit hopefully that growth curve that gets you into the growth stage.
Interesting. So really early on, customer success has to not only revolve around the delivery of your existing customers, but it sounds like it's almost it has to be involved in kind of the strategic direction or even the strategic conversations that the organization is having about what direction they're going to take.
Absolutely. So one of the things that that I talk a lot about with my clients is this idea of voice of customer and the responsibility of customer success to really be the one that's not only sort of collecting that information, but also drilling down with good open-ended questions to try to understand exactly what it is that the customer is either enjoying in the product or is really seeing where the product is, the solution is falling short. And then what we do as well is we put metrics into place that allow us to sort of understand, for instance, what percentage of new feature requests, what percentage of bug requests that are going into your reporting system for the software development team is being contributed by the customer success organization.
That kind of thing
begins to give you a sense as to not only are you hearing that information, but you're able to bring it back and represent it within the organization, and that's a critically important role in an early stage software company so that you can more effectively ultimately get to product market fit.
Well, I think that's really important, as you said, kind of championing the customer, but really it's important that you're truly engaging the existing customers in conversation, because I've definitely seen this, and my guess is you've probably seen this too, where you have those early stage startups, especially in the SaaS and software worlds, where it's kind of run more by the engineers or the people who are making the product, and it might be a really cool, super sexy product, might actually do some really powerful things. But if you don't actually go and have human-to-human conversations with your customers, something gets missed, right? So actually having people who are frontline saying, we are going to engage, we are going to converse with the people who are using this and then report back to our engineers, our programmers, designers. It sounds like that's a really important role as well. Would that be accurate?
So David, as you know, with your sales background, it's incredibly important to leverage sales skills to be successful in the customer success role. So in order to capture that voice of customer, using things like open-ended questions, challenging customers based on what they tell you back, leaving long pregnant pauses in there to give the customer the chance to sort of continue to give you thoughts, listen 80% of the time, talk 20. So these are the kind of skills that I definitely work on with my clients and my customer success teams at my clients to make sure they're as effective as possible in capturing this voice of customer information.
Well, it's interesting. If I think about successful sales people, even before customer success became big or even a thing, they were basically doing customer success, right? They were asking those questions. They were trying to dig and dive in with existing customers for two reasons. One was very selfish. They were looking for those opportunities so they could sell them more, right? But kind of as part and parcel of that, they were then taking this information back to the company as a whole saying, hey, I've had three people ask if we can do this. Can we do this? Right? I'd like to sell to them. Can you figure out how to make that happen? And so it sounds like you're just taking that whole process and really systematizing it and making it a real part of the feedback loop to create growth.
Yes, and exactly. And the opportunity to have these whether they're monthly or quarterly business reviews with your customers, again, is the opportunity to leverage that proximity to your customer and the trust you've built with them in order to share information with them and get them talking about not only how are we doing against sort of achieving your desired business goals that you told me about previously, but what other kinds of goals and desired business outcomes do you have? What other kinds of problems right. can we solve with you? So that's really powerful. And, I definitely think that the more modern approach to customer success is one where that customer success person does have a nose for revenue and is looking for those opportunities to try to solve more problems and really, from the company's perspective, grow share of wallet with the customer.
Absolutely. I think it's another kind of pillar in this idea of being successful. You need to have good sales, good marketing, good customer success, right? The hard delineation between those different areas isn't really true. It's really how do you kind of mash all these things together? Yes, different people are going to be tasked with focusing on it and making sure it happens, right? Marketing has their expertise, sales, customer success, et cetera. But in the end, they all have to work together, right? I kind of think that you're saying a lot about building relationships, right? And that's something that I talk to my clients and to people in general and anybody else who will listen to me on LinkedIn. It really is about driving relationships. It can't just be transactional, which is kind of how it used to be, right? Hey, if I can get the person to buy from me today, well, gosh, I hope we do well, but I don't care because I'm on to the next sale. Where now it's, hey, I'm going to build relationship with these people to not only uncover the other opportunities that we can help them with, but also just to gain their trust. Yeah. So on a human level, they'll tell me about the opportunities that we might be able to help them with, right?
Absolutely. And, many people will tell you sort of the psychology of selling is that people make decisions, sales decisions based on emotion. So if you can sort of tie into that emotion somewhat, and if you can do that by building trust, that leads to some really good, opportunities. Again, both for the customer to receive the value and the good outcome to what they're trying to achieve from a desired business outcome perspective, and for the company to continue to grow. It all works together like that. And that's why I really like this idea of sales and customer success being really joined at the hip and really being the joint revenue engines for companies. And, like I mentioned before, this is not only sort of really mainstream with the recurring revenue SaaS licensed, annual licensed software kinds of companies, but also with what I call repeating revenue companies that aren't even software related. So I've got a client with whom I'm working that sells solutions to home inspectors. And, the goal is to really manage these home inspectors so that they're always going to think of my client whenever they need to do something like get a home warranty or something like that, that they bring this part to the consumer. And then view this client of mine as being, if you will, like a revenue catalyst for their business. And if you get them thinking that way, again, it's not recurring revenue because it can be inconsistent, it's cyclical, but they're always thinking about you. And those repeating revenue companies can really benefit from the same customer success principles.
Well, I would almost go so far to say is that we're moving into an era because of technology, because of ready access to information, because it is usually a lot easier to purchase something, that we're going into an era where most industries are, as you said, maybe not recurring, but definitely repeatable. And there is this need to continuously build that relationship with that customer. I mean, the reality is if you're not taking care of your customer and conversing with them, somebody else is, right? Yeah. No matter what the industry. And just because I said it's so easy to enter a buying journey, no matter what kind of product or service you're looking for, that, when you do get that customer, you better take care of them, right? If you're not talking to them, somebody else is.
Yeah. And so, to that point, one of the really valuable ways to understand that customer even better is via customer journey mapping. So this is something that I'm spending more time on with my customers, especially around the first year of a customer's life with my client. So the idea here is that if I really understand all the different ways that I'm interacting with the client, that the customer is interacting with my client, and understanding the moments that matter, the pain points that customers might feel, and sort of opportunities, it's the best chance for one of my clients to really get sticky with the customer, build trust, grow that customer's commitment to the company, to my client, which is really, really critical. So we spend a lot of time looking at year one when it comes to how well do we implement with you, and then how is that first year renewal experience? And if we're able to really understand, and even if this is just purely an internal exercise with my client, we don't go out and validate it with the clients, even if it's just an internal exercise, it's amazing what you'll find out about, I can't believe we've been doing it that way. That's too many touch points by too many different people at the client.
Right.
So I've found that to be a really effective method by which to really, again, gain more insight about how we might be able to work better. A client of mine would work better with its customers.
I love that. And just the whole idea of looking at it through the lens of the customer. I mean, it's one of those things that should be obvious, but most of us don't do it, right?
Yeah.
Once somebody buys from us, then what happens? How do they engage with us? Yeah. How do they feel about us? What's the next time they get a phone call or an email or a regular, you know, piece of mail, or they now try using? I mean, I think about this very specifically around SaaS products, because as a 21st century small business owner, I use many SaaS products. And there's definitely been times where I've tried one, it sounds like it's going to be great, and then it's a disaster, and I just write it off completely, right? Because it was too hard to make it work for me. I didn't have time to invest in figuring it out. And you just wonder if maybe that company had some way of swooping in and saving me, they would have saved some business.
Yeah. Right? So what that exactly ties in with something that's definitely been a trend that I've seen a lot on the coasts. The East Coast, West Coast, not so much yet here in the Midwest, but it's this idea of product-led growth, and customer success plays a really important role in this world. So the idea is, and again, this is sort of a SaaS, B2B SaaS software approach, which is let's give our software away for free for some limited time to an individual.
Right.
So in a good example is Expensify. Okay. Basic
okay.
kind of expense management kind of solution. You just kind of seed an organization with it. People start to like it. You're being buoyed and supported by a customer success person. Sales is not even in the picture yet. But you get enough of a grassroots movement happening that it starts to bubble up in towards the management level, the people that have budget. And then at that point, sales sort of gets injected into the system because now you've got an active, super well qualified, very warm lead. This is something that.
So it's kind of like a freemium model? Is that?
Yeah. But with a strong customer success component to it right from the beginning to try to get.
Okay.
Again, some of these solutions might be fairly simple and intuitive to use, but you still might need somebody to make sure, hey, this person who downloaded this free version hasn't utilized it in a week. I want to stay on them. You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
So that product-led growth world really kind of puts customer success at the forefront of the customer experience. And sales is really there to sort of try to make it more of an enterprise sale, if you will.
So again, another place where in this case, customer success is really tied in with marketing almost.
Yes.
Right. And you said kind of leading the charge to get into a prospect, and you said make it a really, really warm opportunity. Yeah, that's okay.
And that's another.
It's made me think about some things. All right, I like
and
it.
And that's another thing is another one of the challenges in this customer success world right now is that it's still a relatively nascent kind of function, and there aren't a lot of people with experience in it. And so as we, and I used to be in this role, you know, went around trying to hire people to staff my team, I would look for former salespeople, former product managers, sometimes even marketing people. I came up the marketing route. You know, I was a CMO before I got involved in customer success, and also did product management. So, you know, these are those kinds of roles I think are really important and can be valuable experience builders for people who can have a very successful career in customer success.
Okay. Interesting. All right. I'm going to switch gears a little bit since you just mentioned the coasts. You are one of my IPA friends, and I know you like stuff from the coasts. What are you drinking these days? West Coast or East Coast hazy IPAs that are getting you excited?
Well, you know, we're sort of spoiled here in the Midwest too, especially here in the Chicago area. There's a lot of great brewing going on here. I would consider my style of IPA that I really like being more the West Coast style, kind of the piney flavor.
Okay.
It's funny, the hops sometimes taste different to me, even if it's the same hop from beer to beer. So I can't say there's a particular type of hops I like, but as you know, I'm also a little bit partial to some of the Indianapolis brewing that's happening right now. That's a super good hop blend. And there's two down there, one that's available now, one that I'm eyeing for January. The Indiana City Brewing Sea Reaper is a double wet hopped IPA that's a total good sort of West Coast IPA. Style IPA right now.
All right, that's good. That's a lot. Yeah, double wet.
Double wet hops IPA. It's Cascade and Copper hops. Really good.
Oh wow! That's going to put a little pucker in your smile.
And I'll bring some up for us next time. I'm heading down there again soon, so I'll bring some back up for us. And then
do it
in the January through March period. Sun King, which is probably the biggest microbrewery down in Indianapolis, does a seasonal IPA called Lupulin. That I think is terrific. Again, got that sort of piney flavor. So that's another one that I kind of like. So if anybody's down there in the Indianapolis area or is willing to drive like to Indianapolis Boulevard, just over the border into Indiana, you can find it there. And really, both really good beers.
Nice. So with the West Coast IPAs, like what do you like about them? What kind of draws you to it?
Yeah, it's just this really kind of dry, piney flavor, kind of forest floor. That's kind of the flavors I get out of it. It definitely has a bit of citrus in it as well. But that's kind of, I like them kind of dry. And thus the hazies I've developed a taste for, but haven't totally embraced as much. How about you?
You know, IPAs are tough. I always tell people, Sketchbook, our sponsor for today's episode, has one of the IPAs that I will drink, in their orange door. I always found the hazy IPAs are too much for sure for me. The West Coast IPAs, there's just a little too much bitterness. I've gone on record as saying hops are preservatives, not flavoring. But I do kind of respect the West Coast because obviously one of the early, progenitors of the American craft brewery scene. And they're like, hey, how are we going to stand out? Well, screw this cheap watered down lager stuff. We're going to throw in as many hops as we can. So especially like the California, IPAs, nothing but respect, but they're just, some of them just say, I take a taste and I'm like, oh boy, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Although it is good because they're good sipping beers. And you, for me, at least I'm like, I will have one of these and it'll take me an hour and a half. And that's probably good.
Well, I'll also say my brother-in-law who lives in Tacoma has similar taste to what I have. And he thinks the sort of the Pacific Northwest IPAs are probably more the style that I like. So if you had to even localize it on a West Coast perspective, I think maybe those up that way might be a little bit more like the pioneer kind of flavors.
And I know they're brewing a lot of great stuff up there. We actually just had My friend Michelle Mazur, who's out of Seattle, and she was just talking about all the brewing they do up there. It's just amazing. But that's kind of what's great now is there's good beer everywhere. You were talking about Sun King. I believe that you brought me back once. Was it their Scotch Ale?
Yeah.
That was so good. Yeah. That was so good. And my wife is like, where are you going? I'm like, I got to go see a guy about some beer. he's bringing it over state lines for me.
Right.
That's how you know. And I actually kind of like that. I've had this conversation with somebody about New Glarus, mm-hmm. which is out of Wisconsin mm-hmm. and doesn't distribute here in the Chicago area. In some ways, I think that's just good marketing, right? Because you make some scarcity around it. But I also just kind of like the fact that there's beer that you can only find in certain areas, and it kind of makes it fun. You know, if I'm in Wisconsin, I have a New Glarus. If I go east of into Ohio, or definitely kind of east of Ohio, like get some Yingling because you can't get that, you know, here in Illinois. And it's always fun drinking the beer of the place, that terroir, yeah. as they would say if we were wine snobs.
Right. And everybody's, for the most part, everybody has at least some good beer that they're making.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's hard to find a place that doesn't have any. Now, it's definitely, unfortunately, true you can find some bad beer, but in general, just ask somebody who's in the know and they'll point you to mm-hmm. at least the one place where they're like, yeah, go here, get this, or this. You'll be all set. Yeah. I have a feeling we could talk about beer for another half hour, so I should probably say that this is a good place for us to wrap things up. Brian, I ask all of my guests at the end of our conversation the same question. What is one piece of advice that you'd give someone to help them have a better day today?
Yeah. So, something that I find to really brighten my day, regardless of my mood, is to just find some piece of music that you can listen to, even if it's one song or even part of a song. Just something that you can sort of just get in your head that'll just either, again, put a pep in your step or even make you just a little contemplative. Either way, just something that sort of just maybe gets you out of your head a little bit and just and makes you sort of just enjoy the moment. That's something that I really try to do is on a daily basis if I can.
Love it. You got to have theme music.
I don't know if you're like me, but sometimes I get songs in my head and it's like at the jukeboxes and just overdrive.
What's a song that's come up in the last week or so?
Yeah, you know, I consider them sort of a little bit of a guilty pleasure, but there's an Australian band called the Paper Kites that I've been listening to. They're sort of indie rock folk, but they've got some really, really well done songs. And they just completed a North American tour. I started following them on Instagram and lo and behold, they were like in town, didn't go see them, but there's somebody that right. their music has been really kind of playing its way through my head for the past couple weeks.
Well, I've never heard of them before, so this will be fun finding them on YouTube so I can put them on the show notes. Perfect. Yep. I love it. Brian, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, what is the easiest way for somebody to reach out?
Yep. Best way is to email me, Brian with an I, at caremaconsulting.com. That's Carema consulting.com.
Perfect. And we'll make sure we put all the links in the show notes as well. And everyone, remember to check out our sponsor, Sketchbook Brewing. They've actually sponsored our last couple episodes. I've had their Amistosa over the course of this conversation, and it was delicious. But kind of what I mentioned before, they have everything from really great IPAs and double IPAs to stouts to a lot of experimental stuff. That's what I love about Caesar and the crew over there. They're always trying something new. So anywhere throughout the Chicagoland area or your favorite beer swapping app or club, definitely check them out. You'll definitely enjoy it. And I hope you dug this episode. And everybody, we'll see you next time. Have a great day. Bye.
Thanks for stopping by. You can find show notes and links in this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. We all know the best way to find out about a new podcast is through our friends. So please help us out and share what we're doing through social media, or just tell someone. And if you could do us a favor and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Stitcher, that would be great. Want to get in on the conversation? Send DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar. And we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Feats, and Business.